You may know Dr. Keryn Phelps from any one of the high-profile jobs she's had. Politician, the president of the powerful Australian Medical Association, medical reporter, activist. But like many in the public eye, it's what you don't know that makes you want to know more. Did you know that she was an aerobics instructor? Or that such was her voracious appetite for learning her favourite school holiday reading was the World Book Encyclopedia? Her new memoir is Power of Balance. Dr. Keryn Phelps, welcome to you.
Hello, Andy.
There's no easy way to ask this question, but were you a bit of a nerd?
Proudly so.
Was it alphabetical with the World Book Encyclopedia, or just open it up, take a stab?
Is there any other way?
It's
no, truly. I mean, if there was a subject that I was interested in, and I actually won the set of encyclopedias through a public speaking competition when I was in about year 10. But it was, if I wanted to know something, I had somewhere that I could go to look it up. And so that was just magical.
What was the public speaking competition's topic, can you recall?
Well, I think there were a number, because we went through different stages, but I do remember one of the speeches was about Australia needing a new national anthem. Takes you back a while.
Yeah, interesting. Well, that debate's still obviously continuing. It seems like you had a pretty idyllic and relatively Australian childhood, growing up in Pittwater in Sydney's northern beaches, flicking through the encyclopedia, enjoying sports, swimming and school. What else stands out about that time in your life?
I think all of those things together really constitute my childhood. I was very much close to nature. We lived in a bushy area at that time. The northern beaches hadn't been very much built out, and so there were large tracts of natural bushland, and we had koalas that would amble across the backyard and you'd hear them at night, and we had wild birds and then of course you became an observer of the seasons and the tides when you're out on boats, and so being close to nature like that, I think, really does inform you about the importance of protection of the environment. So that was a very early immersion in nature and the reason for environmental protection.
Your mum and dad also moved the family to the New South Wales country town of Pambula on the south coast, then to Papua New Guinea. That must have been an extraordinary experience. How did these moves sort of shape the person you would one day become?
I think my parents did have a sense of adventure, and I certainly have had a very active curiosity about the world myself and its potential. In a country town, I was quite young. I was preschool age, but there wasn't a preschool in town, so I got to start school early because I was already reading. And I remember that there was a local doctor who was down in that country town who later ended up being a mentor of mine when I went into medical school. So it's funny how things go around. And then when we went to New Guinea, my father, again, I think he had that adventurous spirit about him, and he wanted to go up to New Guinea to work for a while. He was installing air conditioning into the army facilities up there in Papua New Guinea prior to independence up there. So, you know, I got to experience, although I didn't realise that was what I was experiencing at the time, but a segregated community between the people who were Papua New Guineans and the expats who were up there working.
I note that both your parents have an Order of Australia medal. Is that true? And you have an AM too. Your brother's a successful actor. There was certainly something in your family, something in the water, you might say, wasn't there?
Look, there's no question that community service and connection to community was a very strong theme during my growing up. Both of my parents had community service through sporting clubs, through school, parents and citizens. My father did volunteering work for young disabled people to learn to swim. And so that connection to community through community service was very much a theme that ran through my early family life.
I really got the sense of optimism and this tone of optimism through the book. Quite often you write about things happening as if they were an opportunity that came about by chance. But going back to the idea of sort of balance and yin and yang, you were sort of putting yourself out there. It's the sort of thing that my mother told me and still does: fortune favours the brave. How do you reflect on luck versus destiny?
I think the first thing, and I did pass this on to my children, was participation. I think it's really important that, you know, this lesson that history is made by the people who turn up. And turning up, participating, getting involved is a way of developing your skill set. You're not going to be good at everything. You're not going to win everything, but you're going to gain experience along the way, and you're going to expand your skill set. And I guess my very active curiosity meant that I was always looking for new things that I could learn, that I could experience, and then pulling that skill set together. I mean, I grew up in a time when it was very much a do-it-yourself DIY kind of experience at home, where what you could fix and do yourself, you did. At school, I was at a public school. We learned how to sew, to cook, to do woodwork, metalwork, you know, to play musical instruments. So, you know, gaining those skills through participating, and then finding out not only what you're good at, but what you have a passion for. And I think those two things guide you to where you need to be in life.
The title of your book is The Power of Balance, and I suppose that is never truer than when you're an aerobics instructor. Tell me about this foray. Apparently, your ex-husband also made the music for you. I did not know this about you.
Well, he was in the music industry, but I used to put together my tapes based on what mood I was in and what kind of class I wanted to run. But it really all started out with just wanting to be fit when I had two young kids. And it was a form of exercise where it was not weather dependent, whether I could become stronger and fitter, and whether I had childcare. So there were a lot of pragmatic elements to it as well. But I really loved it. I loved the music. I loved the connection with people. And after a couple of years of doing the classes, I thought I'd really actually like to learn to be an instructor. So a couple of the instructors taught me how to be an instructor. There was no formal course back then, which was another theme of my life, about having to make things up as you go along. But there was no actual course to do. So they trained me in how to run a class. And then I put together the music on cassette tapes. It'll take you back too. and I absolutely loved it. It was so much fun. I do theme classes. We might do a rock and roll class, or we might do a heavy metal class, or we might do a Beatles class or something like that. So it was just really good fun.
If you just joined me, I'm with Dr. Keren Phelps on RN Drive. We're discussing her new memoir. And in your time as a medical communicator, you were pretty much on every television channel. That includes, of course, the ABC. So decided to go back through the archives and see what the first record of Keren Phelps was on file. This is the earliest grab or interview soundbite that we could find. It was from the show Everybody that you worked on in 1991. Let's hear a little clip now. Here we go.
When you measure your temperature, you're looking for a very important sign of illness. If it's over 37.5 degrees Celsius, it's a fever, and that's one of the body's ways of coping with infection.
That must have taken you back. I also read that you were supposed to be the host of the show initially, so this is your first foray into, I don't know, the ups and downs of media life, public life, isn't it?
I started working in the media very early in my medical career. I was still in my 20s. I'd only been out of medical school for a few years. I was already in my own general practice, and I thought I needed to do something to help patients understand more about the sorts of conversations that they were having with their medical advisors. And the way to do that was to increase what we call health literacy, or your ability to understand medical language. And so that's really why I started getting into health media. And it was something that really wasn't very much done at the time. In fact, doctors were being discouraged from speaking in the media at the time. And I started out at Channel 10 on television, and then, you know, fairly quickly after that, picked up other jobs that I was doing in radio, television, ended up writing a column for the Australian Women's Weekly for about 25 years. And, of course, I spent that first time at the ABC with the Everybody program, which was a joint effort between one of the government commissions that had been set up to improve health and the ABC. And it was really a landmark infotainment program. Absolutely loved doing it. It was fantastic. And after that, I went to Channel 9.
Remembering the sorts of attitudes that there were in the medical fraternity at that time, and when you first began doing more media interviews, there was this scepticism and, I don't know, medical knowledge gatekeeping, if you like, where doctors were thought of as the experts and people doing their own research would be dangerous and detrimental. It is kind of interesting to see how that's changed. There's another little soundbite I've got from an interview with Margaret Throsby on the ABC back in 1999. Take a listen to this.
Students go to university for how many years to get a medical degree? It's a hard-earned degree. Are they prepared to share this information in the public domain?
Very much so. I think that there has been a growing acknowledgement that a more informed public is a better thing for public health.
It's funny because you think about the hesitation from the medical community and you talk about it in the book as well. It seems rather quaint that there was ever any question to include the patient in more knowledge gathering, really, isn't it?
The chapter in the book, Power of Balance, about the media is called Media Maverick for a reason, because it was really considered to be right out there for a doctor to be regularly appearing in the media and talking about health. And there was, as you say, some gatekeeping of that knowledge. But I think as time went by, it became more and more evident that the more people understood about their own health and the things that they could do to improve their health, to protect their health, to recover from illness and have better conversations with their medical advisors, but then it was that the outcomes were going to be better all around. But to think back all those years, back to the 1980s and the 1990s, there really was quite a resistance to doctors speaking out in the media unless they were speaking on behalf of a professional organisation. So it was something that was new and different, but it really was, I think, a thing whose time had come and that people really did want to know much more. And there was a voracious appetite for that information. I mean, I can remember when I started writing for the Australian Women's Weekly and we'd get letters. I did a Q&A column and we would get letters coming in handwritten with a stamp on them, old style, for me to answer questions that people didn't feel comfortable asking their doctors about and didn't know where to find information. And so I would use that as a catalyst for writing a feature story or writing back to a patient if it was urgent. I would actually write back to the person who wrote to me directly, or we would de-identify if the person wanted to be de-identified and put that question into the Q&A column.
Dr. Norman Swan owes you everything he has in his career when you think about it. I'm curious to ask you about your political life. There's kind of two kinds of former politician. There's the first kind that says they knew everything they knew about human nature before they entered office, and then there's the second kind that says they realised they knew nothing. Which one are you?
Like, I think one of the biggest mistakes you can make in life is to think you know everything at any point about anything, because lifelong learning is an essential. There is always something new to find out, and there is also always something to gain in terms of knowledge. And so I don't think you can ever know everything or have experienced everything.
But politics is a brutal school, and you really get to understand the depths of people's ambition and the heights. I don't want to be too pessimistic here. What was the one thing that you think you learnt from political life?
I think I learnt a lot about the political process. There are things that you can think you know, but you don't until you're actually in the middle of it. And I've had my first experience of Canberra and Canberra politics when I was elected the president of the Australian Medical Association at national level, and I was their first female president. And so going to Canberra and spending a lot of time in Canberra, I met with a lot of politicians, I met with a lot of senior political staff, I worked out how the press gallery, or I thought I worked out how the press gallery worked in Canberra, and worked out how you go about leading a national lobbying organisation like the Australian Medical Association, which is a very powerful lobby group, and representing my profession. It was a great privilege, but it was also an incredibly steep learning curve. So when I was then elected as a Member of Parliament many years later, it wasn't new territory for me, but even then, I was learning so much about the life of a medical of an MP, and what it meant, you know, to represent your community, to do the community work, get across legislation, understand the legislative processes. So again, another steep learning curve.
This memoir really moves at quite a pace, and I gather so do you. You've done so many things in your 66 years. I hope you don't mind me saying that. Do you ever relax?
I do. I think it's really important, again, that power of balance, and balance is really important. There have been times in my life where I have not had enough time for rest and recreation, and I've had to just push through. And I think there's a lot of, you know, people who will be able to relate to this, that there are times where you just have to push through and you think, you know, I'm going to have to leave that till later. I really got a big shock when I had a life-threatening event when I was in my early 40s and I was in intensive care. And one of the things that my medical advisors said to me is that you have to make time for exercise. You have to make time for balance in your life forever. And that was a real kind of wake-up call, that particular moment. But nowadays, I am very keen to make sure that I get exercise, that I get enough rest, that I pace myself, and that's really important. And I do things like kayaking, go out on Port Hacking, the dolphins around me, and I go swimming and I go walking, bushwalking.
So any aerobics in the mix?
Well, that's aerobic exercise, but it's not in a class.
I'm sure you've got the leotard somewhere. You've had such a rich and beautiful life. It's so great to talk about some of the things we don't actually know about you, Keren, and congratulations on this book. Dr. Keren Phelps has been my guest. Her memoir, Power of Balance, is out now. Thanks for your time.
Thank you, Andy.
You've been listening to a podcast of The Drawing Room with me, Andy Park. For more great conversations, search for The Drawing Room on the ABC Listen app or wherever you get your podcasts.